Women's basketball comes to a disappointing end. Track and field gets nationals underway after a scary airport incident. And another bulldog notches his name in the history books. Hello and welcome to episode 34 of Talking Dogs. I'm Cohen Carpenter here with Kai Ulbrich. Kai, how's it going?
It's going pretty good, I think. It's been kind of a weird week in bulldog sports. We've had some high highs, some low lows, and some big questions and some scary moments as well.
So, yeah, some up and downs, some things to get excited about.
Some downs and then backups into the air, thankfully.
Some like bobbing up and down on the runway, but we'll get into that later, as I'm sure every Concordia fan. I found out about it on Twitter, because like obviously I saw that. We'll get into it later. I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's start off with one of the highs, at least for the sports realm of things, on the court side of things, and that's been men's basketball. They've been lighting it up recently. Season came to a close, and that puts a bow on things as a 24-5 team, not too shabby. 16-4 in the GPAC. That's good for the 3 seed, I think they finished as?
They were the 2 seed.
2 seed. Yep. They finished as the 2 seed. Number 11 in the nation in the final poll. Their last regular season win came against Mount Marty. That was February 2nd on Saturday in South Dakota. No Noah Shutt for that game. If you listener of the podcast, follow the team. Noah Shutt injured in the game prior in the pregame warmups, and it was kind of not too much of a serious thing. They said he was a scratch, but it was serious enough that it kept him out for this Mount Marty game. Didn't really matter, though, and we'll see why. Mount Marty got off to a hot start, kind of in the same manner as the game before. I think, was that Midland? The game before?
The game before
Mount Marty? That, my memory doesn't work that
the,
well.
The one from this week was Midland that he got the record against.
Yeah. But then there was Mount Marty, and then what was the second to last game?
Was
of
it Dakota Wesleyan?
It may have been Dak West. I don't know. I've got CTE. But in that game, the opponent we played got off to a hot start.
Yes.
And in this game, Mount Marty got off. They started the game 16-8 lead halfway through the second half. It was still close, 62-39 Bulldogs leading. So just a 3-point game. It was neck and neck, tight and tight, really, really tight. Oh, did you get it?
We got Doan was the previous one.
Doan was okay.
Yeah, because they got off to our side. Fast start.
Keep it together. Goodness
and then
gracious.
We blew them out by 30.
Yeah. Okay. So way to foreshadow, Kai, because from that point onward, after it was 62-59, Concordia went on a 22-4 run.
Wow.
With a lead that got up north of 20 points at one point in the second half. Spot-up shooting has really been a unsung hero of this team, because so much we talk about Smith Shutt or Shutt Smith, but the spot-up, like the secondary guys, the guys coming off the bench who are just make their career out of like sitting in the wing and stuff like that. Enough talking about it. I'll read you some stats. But before Mount Marty, to their credit, they didn't let Tristan beat them, because I feel like when Noah was shut, that was kind of the obvious game plan.
Right.
And when you're watching this game, a lot of double teaming, a lot of triple teaming. And Tristan did something. He's not unfamiliar with the art of the triple-double.
No.
But he was really spreading the ball around. He had a team-high 9 assists in this one. But who was he assisting? Well, like we said, the spot-up shooting. You have Zach Cullis, 16 points, 6-for-6 field goals, 4-for-4 from 3.
Wow. Lights-out shooting there.
Bradley Bennett led the team in scoring with 17 points, 6-for-10 from the field, 5-for-8 from 3. Jackson Stuvey, 15 points, 6-for-8 from the field, 3-for-4 from 3. Brooks Kissinger, 15 points, 5-for-6 from the field. Tristan Smith was the, what does that make him? The fourth leading scorer on this?
Don't see that very often.
Yeah, he was 13 points, but he was 6-for-9 from the field. Very efficient.
That shows you how much pressure he's getting is when you could, when we're shooting probably upwards of 50% from three.
Okay, here we go. Ready?
Okay, yeah, sorry.
All right, you're getting ahead of yourself again. Calm down. In the second half, Concordia shot 81.8% from the field and 71.4% from three.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So, good game plan. I am a fan of the game plan. Don't let Tristan Smith beat you. But also, a thing that beats you is 70% from three.
Yes, if you have no pressure on a college basketball player, they're probably going to knock down some threes.
Yeah. So, it's just got to be triple team Tristan and then get in the passing lanes, because he was doing a good job of just drawing three down low and then chucking it out. So, I guess don't let him chuck it out, but obviously easier said than done. That brings us to drumroll, the opening round of the GPAC tournament against Midland in Seward. Midland was the seventh seed in the GPAC. They've actually been on a 13-game losing streak to the Bulldogs. They haven't won one against us in a while. Moral of the story, I'll skip to the end and then go into the details. Concordia wins this one big, 101-81, advancing to the semifinal round. So if you've seen this, everyone's seen it, let's talk about it. Tristan Smith, 48 points, which is the most in a single game in Concordia history. That passes John Ziegler, who set the record at 47 back in 2007. Side note, tough year to be John Ziegler or a John Ziegler fan, because this is the same guy who Noah Shutt broke his...
Oh, he was the old top all-time scorer.
He was the all-time scorer that Noah Shutt broke his record this season. But I'm sure he's also a Bulldog fan, so he's probably excited watching these
records
games.
Records are made to be broken.
The fun part about Tristan Smith's 48 points is I think they really summarize his play style and the night that he had. So, points 40. 40 points came on a dunk, so you get the physicality yeah. element. 42, as a matter of fact, came on a dunk as well. 44, drove in the paint, got a layup. 45 and 46, he was very efficient from the charity stripe. He got those at the free throw line. And then the ultimate 48 record-breaking points came as he was blowing past the double team to get to a layup.
Yep, pretty much. It was a very Tristan Smith scoring performance.
Yeah.
There were a few times, like, he is not a shooter. He'll admit he's not a shooter.
Yeah.
He had open threes a few times and just didn't take them.
Nary a three was attempted in these 48 points.
I noticed also, rarely will he ever actually shoot the ball. He was finger rolling everything. Even if it was like 6 feet away,
yeah.
if he would jump up, it'd be a finger roll.
He's got good touch.
It'd usually go in, so you can't knock it too much.
Knock the guy. He's got 48.
And his free throw shooting was pretty good, so...
Yeah.
He's got what he needs.
10 for 12 from the stripe. This was Tristan's first ever 40-point game. I believe it's either his fifth or sixth 30-point game.
Yeah.
So he's gotten that a few times, but first ever 40. And that brings you to a final line of 19 for 26 from the field, 0 for 0 from 3, 10 for 12 from the free throw line, 10 rebounds, also led the team in rebounds with 10, 4 assists, 48 points. That's the stat line for Tristan Smith.
And towards the end of that game, they were quadruple teaming him.
It was crazy.
He would get the ball because, okay, the game was over with about 5 minutes left. Coach Limbach put Tristan back in to get the record.
Yeah.
You know, he,
good on him. That's a good
yes,
move.
For sure. And, you know, we're forcing Tristan the ball a little bit. But, man, they were triple and quadruple teaming him every time he got the ball. Everyone else was wide open.
And they've got some height on that Midland squad. Like, there's some tall guys that he's got to contend with in the paint.
Yeah, thankfully, their biggest guy, number 15, he actually fouled out.
That's right. He had 4 fouls, like, early on. Uh-huh. And they were kind of real tentative about playing him.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you got to foul out at that point.
So that certainly helped Tristan in the latter stages after he fouled out. But still, man. Triple, quadruple teaming. I think they had all 5 guys on him when he scored his last one.
Yeah.
He kind of drove in. He saw 5 people there and just kind of jumped over them and finger rolled it in.
Yeah, it was nuts. It was nuts to watch. There's some really cool clips on Twitter, if you go, or X yep. or whatever. If you go and you look at the videos and, like, the call is pretty cool. And
uh-huh.
Obviously, the stadium goes pretty nuts. It's cool to see the bench's reaction, as it always is. But some other things happened this game. And I think a lot got lost in the... in the Tristan Smith fiasco, as it should. But here's just some other factoids about the game. Ready? So I mentioned this, but Concordia, that's now 14 straight wins over Midland.
Wow.
So that's pretty good. Concordia has made the GPAC Conference semifinals. This makes 4 years in a row. So they're
pretty consistent.
The seniors on this squad do not know what it's like to not make the GPAC semifinals, which is a pretty cool feeling, I must imagine. Noah Shutt also returned for this game. Played for 18 minutes, didn't do bad either. I think he was like 4 for 9 shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Concordia, this is, I said factoids, they don't have to be fun. Concordia went 0 for 10 from 3 in the first half, but nobody knew because just Tristan Smith was going insane.
Yeah, that is interesting. Okay,
isn't that crazy?
Yeah, because I got there like 8 or 9 minutes into the game and sat down, you know, taking in the scenery, and I looked up at the scoreboard, and I saw number 12, like, 20 points. And I was
yeah.
like,
Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought that we were shooting badly because we were winning and Tristan had 20 and life was good.
Like I said.
Life was really good.
We were 0 for 10 and nobody knew. Which is, you can't say that often. And then Concordia, this is the last factoid. Concordia had one player in double digits. We know who that was. Midland had 5. So.
And they still lost by 20.
They still lost by 20. But no, they're just fun factoids. All right, so now. Turning our attention, that is a fun moment, but the season still must march on. The next game is the semifinal round. Northwestern, the number 3 seed in the GPAC, will be coming to Seward Saturday, March 1st. That is tomorrow as of recording. The Red Raiders are 13th in the nation. We're 11 in the nation, so it's neck and neck. Also, to demonstrate that it's neck and neck, we've played them twice this year. The home team has won both games. We've split that series 1-1. Northwestern is coming off a 20-point win versus Briarcliff in their opening round of the GPAC playoffs. So, a fun one to watch. And, I mean, ideally, obviously, you're not looking for, like, a 48-point game every game. But Noah Shutt only played 18 minutes. Kind of got out of hand. He didn't need to play more.
Yep.
But you would think, given the time and given he were comfortable enough to play last game, you'd have a more healthy Noah Shutt.
And a very rested Noah Shutt, because he only played 18 this game, and he didn't play the last game either.
Didn't play Mount Marty and didn't play the game prior. So very rested Noah Shutt, and then obviously a very moralized Tristan Smith.
Just a very dominant Tristan Smith right now.
And then a team that obviously they've got the workarounds. I feel like these two games without Noah Shutt can obviously prove to be pretty beneficial for the team's mindset, that they can win in more ways than one.
Definitely. We talk about the women's team a lot and how much depth they have, but this men's team is also a deep men's team. Extremely deep. There's 8 or 9 guys playing consistent minutes for this team.
Yeah, very, like, the two games that they won, the Mount Marty game, Tristan Smith was 4th in points, so you can spread the ball around and win games, and in this playoff game, obviously you can have a guy take over, and you can win both ways. Add Noah Shutt to the mix, it's a whole other animal. It's going to be fun to see how Northwestern contends with that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this one. The atmosphere at the last game was pretty nuts, so everyone should come watch.
Yeah, be there. Moving on, we have exciting, not really, I don't know if exciting is a word. There was off the court, off the track, off the field news as it relates to the track team. I'll let you take this over, but because you wrote the story on this. If you haven't seen it, the story's on the CUN ESOA website, but the track had some happenings before they headed to nationals.
Yes, so the track and field team left a couple days ago to go to Gainesville, Florida for nationals.
Mm-hmm.
Not many direct flights out of Omaha to Florida, so they had to make a little stop at Chicago Midway on the way. So 24 national qualifiers, plus coaching staff, athletic training, the whole thing. So they get on their Southwest plane, and they make their way towards Chicago, and everything is going nice and smooth, coming in for a nice, easy descent. Everything's under control. And then all of a sudden, the plane touches down and then lifts right back up again, back in the air, a little touch and go. And
yeah, that's crazy.
Everyone on the plane is a little bit confused, but no one's like panicking. I saw some quotes. CNN had an article. They interviewed some people. Yep. They were like, we really didn't know what was going on. The pilot was super calm and just kind of did it.
He probably made a goofy joke, too, with it. Was it Southwest?
It was Southwest. Yeah, it probably was
those,
a goofy
those
joke.
Pilot, hey, you know what? I'm glad pilots make that much money. Because to be, like, that quick on your feet and then, like, how many people you're responsible for. And then if you're, like, a Southwest and you, like, joke about it, you're like...
Talent. That's talent right
Tarmac
there.
Tarmac was a bit hot today. We're going to come down and see if it cools around. Uh-huh. I don't know if he probably said something stupid like that.
But the whole reason for this touch-and-go incident was because there was a private jet that crossed the runway right in front of them. The reports say that they got as close as 2,000 feet to each other, which seems like a lot until you're moving at 200 miles an hour. Then that goes pretty quickly.
It's not a lot in aviation terms.
So the air traffic controllers did their job. They were communicating with the Southwest plane and the private jet, but the private jet did not heed orders and crossed anyway.
He's got places to be, man. When you gotta go, you gotta go.
Yep, so he was crossing right in front of where the Southwest plane was meant to be touching down, so Southwest plane, it's a little touch and go, thought on his feet pretty quickly, and disaster was averted.
That's crazy. And I bet you for a lot of those people on the plane, it was probably they didn't find out the exact circumstances of what happened until they probably like saw the videos on Twitter afterwards.
Probably not. And we actually have a quote from Coach Beisel.
Oh, yeah.
He posted on X about the incident, and he said, "I'm thanking God for the outcome of this. It could have been very different. Our coaching staff and 24 collegiate track and field athletes were on the Southwest flight route to the NAIA National Indoor Track and Field Championship. Pilot made a smooth touch and go, and we are safe."
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really incredible.
Very amazing.
That's so, a God thing.
Very scary situation, but thankfully, due to whatever circumstances you would like to say.
You know what?
We're going to go with God on this one.
Yeah. You know what? You know what? I usually am very annoyed by these people, but now, next time I'm on a plane and we land, I may consider clapping.
That one was definitely a clap-worthy flight.
not like a full-on applause, but I'll do golf clap.
The golf clap, the finger snaps.
The finger snaps, yeah.
I think it's deserved.
I'd consider it. Because that, I mean, hats off to the pilot.
Yes.
That's good work. Good work.
Yes, but thankfully, since our athletes are safe, that means they do get to compete at Nationals, which kicked off yesterday and is still going on today and will be going on March 1st, which is tomorrow. Just a couple different, I guess, highlights from that so far. We had Johnny Jerkin.
There he is.
Our race walker.
That's our guy.
So he actually qualified for the finals.
Of course he did.
Which is actually today. So he walked 14:44 in his preliminary round. So he was sixth in his heat and 12th overall in the prelim. So he made the finals. We've got the men's distance medley. They got a PR in their event. Our women's 4x4, which is Adriana Rodenzel, Trinity Tools, Isabel Salters, and Kayla Kirchner. They got second in their heat. Unfortunately, didn't qualify for finals, though.
Ah.
And yeah, so that was all for day one events. There are more races and throwing and field and all the fun stuff going on today through tomorrow. We will keep you updated on the next episode of everything that happens.
Yeah,
so
that'll be cool.
Best of luck to the rest of those track and field athletes. Like we said, there's 24 of them who are there, so still lots of action, and we'll be...
That's a good number. I wonder how that compares to the other teams that are there, because that 24 seems like a big, healthy number.
It does seem like it. You got some relays in there, like distance medley, 4x4, 4x8. You've got some overlap for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd say that's a pretty healthy number to qualify.
Good. Talking about healthy number, the baseball squad is now sitting at a healthily above 500 right now. 5-3 on the season. They've had a few more games since we last spoke. Still number 20. The baseball rankings, I guess, don't update as quickly as the football or the basketball do, because we're still rocking with the preseason ranking. Although it's only been 8 games. We'll give them some time. They had the Jamestown series. That was on the 24th Sunday and Monday the 25th. This game was actually not played in Jamestown. It was played in Piedmont, Oklahoma.
Ooh.
At Piedmont High School, because the weather conditions were bad in Fort Scott, and I guess, I don't know, that's not really much of a neutral site for either of us, especially not for Jamestown, the way they got to come down. End up splitting the series 2-2, I'll be quick, 4 games. It was really like, you pick one game of these 4, and it's just a completely different vibe. Game 1, you got a 9-11 loss. This one was back and forth. Concordia, seemed like they were going to cruise, had a 7-0 lead through 2. Jamestown then scores 3 in the 3rd, 4 in the 5th. And made it 9-7.
Ooh.
Concordia, but we scored 2 more in the 6th.
Okay.
Jamestown responded with 2 in the 7th, and that put things to bed. This is the first game of the back-to-back, so it was only a 7-gamer. Ty Nikolajczak, second baseman phenom for the Bulldogs. He went 3-for-3, 2 walks. His third hit of the day was his 200th as a Bulldog.
Wow. That congrats to him.
Elite company. He's only the 8th member of Concordia's 200 hit club, so wow. That is nice company to be in. Another one being, name we'll recognize, is Joey Gabranski. He's in that club. Jaden Quinn, also one of the premier stars on this team. He was batting second. Goes 2-for-4, 4 RBIs. All 4 of those RBIs coming courtesy of a grand slam that he hit in the second inning. And then Matthew Rhodes is hitting third. He goes 2-for-4, 2 RBIs, 2 walks. That's the top 3 in the order. The rest of the lineup went 5-for-23, but so you got most of that production was just a crazy, crazy onslaught by the top 3 there. Excited to see what Matthew Rhodes will do this year.
Definitely. He was the National Freshman of the Year last season.
It's always cool to see what like the exciting freshman does in their second season,
right.
No matter what sport. And he's We'll see later, but he gets off to a pretty hot start here.
Yes, and I was actually talking to him the other day on the way back from one of my classes.
Yeah,
and,
what's he got to say?
And he was saying that, basically he told me he's doing pretty much as good as he was last year, hitting-wise, but thinks he can definitely take it up another level.
I think he can, too.
I'm hoping we can see that from him in the coming weeks.
Usually, he's still playing first base. And
yes.
Usually, you want your first base to be those big slugger types, and I think he's going to fit that role nicely. Just to put a bow on this game, on the pitching staff, Aaron Petty for the Concordia ends up getting the loss, giving up three runs across the fourth and the fifth inning, and just inning and two-thirds of work. Pitchers had a hard time finding the strike zone in this one. 10 walks, only striking out 6 as a pitching staff. Not great number there, but they bounce back in game 2. 10-4 win. Jamestown actually had the early lead. They had a 2-run first inning. And then Concordia scored 9 unanswered runs to put things away. This was across like the second, third, fourth inning. It just an onslaught of offense. Matthew Rhodes got in on the action. 2 for 3, 2 RBIs, 2 walks, and a home run. Jaden Jordahl got in, 2 for 4, 4 RBIs, 1 walk. He had another grand slam. And then our favorite pitcher on the show, Christian Gutierrez, just went off. So we mentioned they had 2 runs in that first inning. He works around that traffic, ends up going 8 innings pitched, only giving up 6 hits, half of which were in that first inning, 3 earned runs, and 6 strikeouts. He did a good job of working around first inning traffic. He's undefeated on the year, sitting at 2-0 is his record. He gets the win, obviously. Game 3, kind of just bringing it all together. 11-2 win. Seemed like it'd be a pitcher's duel. You would get like 1 inning, it would be like a run, and they would switch the lead, and they'd get tied. They were tied at 2-5 until the Bulldogs put up 9 runs in the top of the 6. Sent 15 batters to the plate. Catcher Michael Welch, again, it's like a new name every time, is contributing to the offense. He had a great game. 3 for 4, 3 RBIs, 1 walk. He hit a homer. Ty Nikolajczak had 2 RBIs and 2 walks. Freshman Micah Sweeten got the start. So this is kind of the crazy thing about baseball, right? So freshman Micah Sweeten gets a start, has a great outing. 4 2/3 innings, only gives up 2 hits, 0 earned runs. He did give up a few runs, but they were unearned because of errors. He walked 3 and he struck out 4. He doesn't get the win because at the time, we didn't have the lead. We ended up getting the lead when the pitcher of record was Maverick Wilder. And Maverick Wilder, he pitches, good for him, he pitches 1 1/3, doesn't give up a run, and a strikeout. So he pitches that one inning where we got the lead, and he gets the win. So that looks good on his record. Sucks for Micah Sweeten, though, because he pitched but for a freshman, that's a pretty good outing right there. 4 2/3. No earned runs, striking out 4. Hats off, Michael Sweeten.
It's kind of cool getting to see these 4-game series where you get some pitchers who you wouldn't maybe see in a 1 or 2-game outing.
Yeah.
You can't have your one pitcher throw 4 games in a row.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not like
impossible.
That's a big difference between baseball and softball, right? You know, you go softball out there, you get the same girl and she pitches, you know, just 500 pitches over
right,
a weekend.
Right.
You do that and the guy's arm will fall off. So that's a definitely something you got to consider. Game 4, last game of the series, 3-16 loss. What happened?
Ooh.
Concordia, again, got the early lead. Jaden Quinn hit a solo homer to start the game in the top of the first. But the Jimmies scored 6 in the bottom of the first, 1 in the second, 2 in the third, 5 in the fourth, and 2 in the fifth. And that is like 9 or something. I don't know. I can't do math. They ended up scoring a lot early on in the game. Jaden Quinn had a good game. Not that it meant much. 2 for 3, 2 RBIs. He had a home run. He accounted for 2 of the Bulldogs' 5 hits, so a quiet game for the offense.
So he was most of our production throughout the game.
Most of our production, yes, sir. And Concordia threw 6 pitchers. Cade Spoomer ends up getting the loss after allowing 7 earned runs in his 1 1/3 innings pitched. As we are speaking right now, there are games occurring at Home Field Baseball Complex in Kansas City, Kansas.
Not home field, as in our home field,
no,
but as in home field in Kansas.
That's the name of the field. They had a game earlier today versus William Penn University. They already lost that one 8-13. There's an ongoing game against Dickinson State. There's no stats right now. There's no live stats. There's not even stats for that William Penn game, and that finished a couple hours ago. So if they ever get stats posted, we'll give those to you the next podcast. But beyond those 2 games, Concordia is going to play those 2 teams again tomorrow, William Penn and Dickinson State. That'll be March 1st. Again, that'll be in Kansas City, Kansas, to wrap up that series. So that's baseball. pretty good. Obviously, it's nice that they're sitting above 500, and then you really get to see what you're about when you get into the GPAC play here in the coming months. But talking about GPAC play, I believe wrestling is in the midst of, they just got done with GPAC. Are they in nationals now?
They are moving on to nationals pretty quickly. So we did just have the GPAC tournament on the 22nd of February is when it finished up. No softball this week. They are gearing up for a series this coming weekend. So we will break down the GPAC wrestling. We had quite a few top five finishers and a lot of national qualifiers.
There we go.
We're gonna just break down all those guys who got 1 through 5 and then talk about some unfortunate situations for a few of our guys. So we had one first place finisher, Creighton Bauman, expecting to see him up there. He's been runner up the last two seasons, and he finally gets that 141 crown. Obviously a national qualifier for getting first in the conference. He's number 6 in the nation right now, so looking to make some big waves at nationals, maybe even get a placement, get a medal. All-American. Hagen Heistand, he got second place at 149. He as well is a national qualifier. Cole Price at 157 got second, also a national qualifier. Tommy Wentz at 165 got second, is not a national qualifier.
Oh my gosh.
And that you feel bad for him as you go down this list and see some more national qualifiers.
Yeah, man, that stinks.
So Brent Ward, third place at 165, no nationals. Hunter Weimer at 184 does make nationals. He got third. Steven Barnes, fourth at 149, he makes nationals. Barrett Brandt, fourth in 184, he is also a national qualifier. Mason Garcia, fourth at heavyweight, he is also a national qualifier. Bryce Carlin at 133, fifth, does not make nationals. But then Torrance Kean, fifth place in 197, is a national qualifier.
So we got a good number. We got a good number of qualifiers there.
A lot. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 national qualifiers. You feel for Tommy Wentz.
So what
though.
Gives? What's the deal there? Is that just?
I think it's just first place gets the auto, and then it's all wild cards after that.
What?
Which I didn't know until this, because high school, I think it's your top three from each conference make state in Nebraska.
Yeah.
So I just assumed it was like top couple.
Yeah, and how do you get second and not? I don't get that.
So he must just not have been ranked high enough?
Yeah.
And maybe they just, if you win your conference, you make it, and then you have to be ranked in the top 25.
He should wrestle the judges.
He should.
Yeah, maybe that'd change their mind. Put him in a...
Once he cuts off their air supply, we'll see what they think.
Yeah.
Once you tap, I go to nationals. Then you get let go.
Yeah, I like that idea.
But yeah, so obviously amazing for Torrance. Fifth place and making nationals, but you feel for Tommy, you feel for Brent.
Yeah.
Just unfortunate situations for them.
Seems like a good total team effort, though. I think a lot of them...
For sure. And our team did end up getting third overall in the standings.
Okay.
So not too shabby
either. Podium, that's a podium.
Definitely. And remember what their coach was saying earlier in the year about how they're not really a duels team.
Yeah.
They're more of that bigger tournament style, and I think that shows itself here. 11 teams in the GPAC for guys, and they end up getting third place. So you've got Doan up there, who's always ranked top 10 nationally, so they're always going to win it. And then to come in pretty much right behind them is not too bad.
Yeah, not bad at all.
And yeah, so the national wrestling tournament will be at Park City Arena in Park City, Kansas, March 6th through 8th. So
got to keep our eye on that.
We've got eight competitors going. Thankfully, they will not need to take air travel on their way to Kansas. So hopefully a little bit more of a secure trip there, a more peaceful visit. 8 Bulldogs will be representing Concordia, and good luck to them.
Good luck wrestling. But moving on, this will be the last one. Like we said, no softball, so last sport to cover, and we have been putting this off to the end of the episode. We don't want to talk about it, frankly. But women's basketball. So let's start off with their final game of the regular season. This was a 66-68 loss at Mount Marty, February 2nd in Yankton, South Dakota. Mount Marty, who I believe was like 7th or 8th in the GPAC.
So they were 9th. We were
8th.
We finished they up were 9th. They were 9th, but you see a big discrepancy in records.
Yeah, no. It's like, it's a gap.
It's a big gap. So what were we, like 11 and 13?
Yeah, in something like that. Around 500.
Yeah, so I remember Mount Marty's record. They were 5 and 12 in the conference.
What are we? Okay, let's break it down.
Let's talk about it.
Part of the issue, we only shot 23% from three in the first half, but that's really not it, because Mount Marty didn't shoot well in the first half. I think they shot like 10% from three. So we weren't going shot for shot from three, that's for sure. We get outscored 16-4 in the second quarter.
Oh no.
16-4.
4 points.
Two of those points came at the charity stripes, so we end up going 1-for-12 shooting with 4 turnovers in a quarter.
Oh.
In a quarter. We bounced back scoring-wise, 23 in the third, 20 in the fourth, but we dug a hole for ourselves.
Big hole.
And Mount Marty was just able to keep us at bay, and we ended up losing. Kendall Brigham, 12 points. She went 4-for-7 from three. She also went 4-for-7 from the field, so she only shot threes. So it's good when you're making them at that clip. 4-for-7, that's a nice. But more problematic, good for Kendall Brigham, but more problematic is she had 5 rebounds. That led the team. And this is another, I don't have to tell you this, but this is another game where we lose the rebound battle.
Yep. And how tall is Kendall?
Not that tall.
5 maybe?
Maybe.
Maybe.
On a good day.
Yeah.
And she was the only Bulldog in double digits, too. Again, this is another game where we lose the turnover battle, or rebound battle, rather. And it's another game in which every Bulldog saw the court. All but 2 Bulldogs scored. So these are meaningful minutes. And this is a 2-point game. This isn't a blowout. And yes, there is some give and take. We'll get into this when we talk about the Dort game. But this has always been kind of the philosophy of Concordia basketball ever since Drew Olsen has been here, is we love the full court press,
yes.
Right? Full court press, though, is very taxing on the players. So a lot of times, like early on, and you'll see this in competitive games too. This isn't just blowout. You'll see like full hockey line switches where you got 5 girls going in, 5 girls coming out. And it is just a new team on the court because the full court press and just how physical and athletic and active we are all across the court. But it's just, it is, I think it's been recontextualized this year because it just seems like they're searching. It just seems like they're searching for something.
I was just about to ask, do you think a lot of the one in the Mount Marty game is that full court press, or do you think it's Coach Olsen?
I think it's both.
Do you think he's trying to find that last little spark before playing? Because the game really didn't matter in the end. They were locked in at 8th.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
So I wonder if it was just him thinking.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And that's what I'm trying to say. Thank you for clarifying. Because I think like in the past, it has been expressly for the purpose because a full line switch is conducive to the type of offense and defense that we run as a team.
Right.
We are just a very athletic and active team. And if you keep girls out there for, you know, like 30 plus minutes a night, they will be worn down. And it's going to be like you're pitching a starter 2 nights in a row. It's not going to work. This year, it just, and like I don't have any like hard stats to like verify this, it just seems like it's been more of a fishing expedition where we're just throwing something out there and hoping that it works, mainly in regards to the rebounding issue, I think has been the big point of focus.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that, but first, again, like Mount Marty game really didn't matter. It was just concerning, right? And warranted, I think, because next game, you're at Dort, opening round of the playoffs in the GPAC Conference Tournament.
Against the number one in the nation.
Number one in the nation, who we have brought into overtime twice, mind you. This time we were not so fortunate, 66-80 loss. It's clear this team's looking for answers. McKenna Robbins got the start at the 4.
Is that her first start of the season?
I want to say that's her first start of the season. And listen, we'll be the first to sing McKenna Robbins' praises, but it just seemed like ever since Raylan Kelty went down, and they've been trying to find that production from the rebounding side of things, and that's been Abby Heemstra a bit in the past few games where they've been trying to work her in at the 4, and for whatever reason, this game it was McKenna, and that's all well and good. She has been playing her butt off as a
freshman. She's been really good.
She has been very good. And then she only ends up getting played like 5-ish minutes, and then Kelty comes in the game.
She only got 5 total?
It was she ended up finishing with like one of her lower totals on the season. Because like in recent games, McKenna's been getting 15, 18 minutes,
right,
like
right.
Close to starter type minutes.
Remember CIT, she had over 40 throughout the weekend.
Yeah. That's right. And this game, she gets, I think it's 9 total minutes. And in that opening little segment where she's a starter, it's like less than 5. And
that's
she,
interesting.
It's very interesting. Kelsey comes in the game. She had been nursing an ankle injury. I don't think it fully healed, but you couldn't tell because they got off to a hot start in this one. Kristen Vriesemeyer started with 6 points. Raylan Kelty, when she came in that game initially, she didn't start, but she came in the game in the first quarter. She hits 3-3-3. It's like back-to-back-to-back almost in possessions. And she starts off 9 points off rip. We ended up having the lead. It was very close back and forth. We shot 5-for-11 from 3 in the first half. And we went to the locker room down 1. It was 38-39. Felt good.
You're happy with that scoreline.
Very happy. And then you come out of the locker room at halftime, and Dort goes on a 13-0 run, and they never look back.
Mm.
Defense started to slip down the stretch. I feel like that really it really started to slip. I think you saw a lot of it just looked at times like we were tired in the backcourt. And something to give kudos to Dort. So at like the top of the key, they've got scores. They've got Macy Sievers, who puts up like 20 a night. But on the back line, they do such a good job of getting behind your forwards and your centers, and just they're real stealthy. They're real sneaky back there, and they switch, and they run from like the corner to under the basket, and they're uncovered a lot of times. They manufacture a lot of good looks in the paint, is what I'm trying to say. And we had a hard time keeping up. We really did. The game starts getting late early. We start fouling, and by then, you know, it was too late. I had a little hope. Oh, when did I have hope? Because we were down, it was like 10 with like 3 minutes left. And at this time, you know, like they were rolling. They were just cruising in the fourth. And AK, Abby Kreiser, gets a steal. And then I'm starting to believe a little bit.
Cause, this could be the start of it.
I was like, this is gonna happen. And then like we end up like getting a good look. We miss a shot. We get the offensive rebound. I think we miss a shot again. Give the ball right back, and yeah, by that time, you know, 2 minutes left, the clock was not our ally, and it got, again, like I said, it got late early. Concordia was out-rebounded once again. Surprise, surprise.
No surprise there.
29-39. This time it was a healthy margin. The only good news of the game was Megan Belt. Megan Belt, the junior, she's a really good shooter. We brought her in. She was in the starting lineup, and she's gotten a lot of starts recently because she really stretches the court for us, one of our better shooting threats. 17 points on 5-for-7 shooting from 3.
Wow.
A rebound and assist, no turnovers. Very efficient.
That's a very good game.
Very, very good game from Megan Belt. That led the team in scoring. Only Bulldog in double digits. National tournament. So, okay, looking forward. That's the game. It stinks. It sucked. National tournament is not out of the question, but they're not going to make it. It's not happening.
You're not going to take 8 GPAC teams.
It's a possibility. But Olsen's comment after the game, he was talking about the season in the past tense. Never a good sign.
No.
Only beating... Oh, dude, this was a stinky end of the regular season. We lost 5 of our last 6. We only beat Doan down the stretch.
Yeah,
we lose to Mount Marty.
Who's not a great
team. It's just...
Yeah, admittedly, this team unfortunately doesn't deserve to make national tournament.
It is... On paper, it was I could make it work in my mind. Just this roster, how it's constructed,
yep.
I could see them doing the things that last year's team did, just in different ways. But
and the national committee agreed with you at the start of the season,
ranked
putting
5,
them number 5,
got off to a hot start, mind you. We beat Sterling, who was 10.
We beat Oklahoma City Stars, who were 6.
And then you go, and
we lost to a D1 team by 2 in an
exhibition
game.
Yeah, that was
game.
An FCS school. Oh, I guess they don't have FCS in Bay. But yes, a smaller D1 school, but yes. And then you go in right before Thanksgiving break, and you gut it out. You gut it out against one of the better teams, the best team in the nation in Dort. And you take them to overtime, and you end up having a bunch of players foul out at the end. And it's just, you had Wieselmeyer, I didn't mention this, so obviously I mentioned her in the hot start. She had 6 to start the game, and I think she finished with 9. She had 6 in the first quarter, finished with 9. And you have Kelty, who had 9 in the first quarter, finished with 10. So, like, again, just, I went on a little mini tangent there, but just died in the second half. But you had Wieselmeyer in that first game, who I think still is her career high. She hit like 27.
27 against Northwestern, yeah.
And it's just, it's this was something happened over Thanksgiving break, and it's I think it's something that is gonna be something for Coach Olson to look at, I think.
Because he's never really had a season like this. He's used to efficient and successful team.
He's used to a very successful team. This is going to be a test of the roster, a test of his coaching, I think, just to make sure that whatever this was, because you can't really point the finger. The talent is there. There wasn't a big injury.
No.
This had the legs to make a deep postseason run. So whatever this bugaboo was, it's obviously not something that will show up in the stat sheet, and you've got to make sure that you quell this before it festers.
Yes, I think for a coach like Coach Olson,
he'll do it.
You can forgive him 100% for one bad season. He's the winningest coach in Concordia history.
You cut him
some slack for one bad year. But you gotta pick it up next season.
Yeah, no,
and he knows that better than anyone else.
I don't even know how to diagnose it at this point. But it'll be interesting to see what they come up with next year. Again, I'm super excited about next year. We'll probably talk about this. We'll probably dedicate an episode to him.
Yeah,
next
we'll
year.
Yeah, we'll try to have Olson on for an episode.
Yeah, that is an exciting roster. But just to put a point on it, this is the end of the regular season. End of the season, likely. Only the second time Coach Olson has failed to make the national tournament.
Wow.
Last time, again, like they could still make it, but he's not gonna make it. Last time was 2010. So I got to doing a little bit more research just because I'm curious. This is a historically dominant program. At 15-5, which is what the final record was, this is Concordia's first losing season since 2005. I was 2 years old. Coach Olson's first losing season.
Wait. It finishes in what month?
It finishes in like February, March.
So I wasn't born yet.
Yeah. So pre-Kai was, ever since Kai Ulbrich has been alive, they've been a winning team.
That's crazy.
Coach Olson's first losing season ever as a Bulldog. I was looking it up. In 1981, Concordia goes 6-14. They don't have another losing season for 24 more years. That was that 2005 season. After going 13-7 in 2005, they don't have another losing season for 19 more years. That was this year for the 14-5 season.
So it seems like it's a 20-year cycle. We're great for 19, 20 years, and then we have one bad season. So I guess history repeats itself.
Yeah, I'm glad they put us through this. Like the 2 years that I was here to do the podcast, we get to cover their like historically once in a blue moon losing season.
Right.
Thank you. That's very cool. But on the flip side, 20 years of dominance is like, this is guaranteed, right? It's guaranteed for the future. Actually, another fun factoid, after the 1981 losing season, that very next year, they were ranked number second overall in the nation, and they end up making the NSAA or whatever it was. This is pre-GPAC, the championship game or whatever. So
crazy. So should be a bounce back year for them.
Your tickets now.
All the pieces are still in place for it to be a really good year. Coach Olson, he'll figure it out.
He always does.
He always seems to.
Yeah. I think it's going to be weird. I'm really excited to hear what he has to say on the podcast, just because it's like, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. What questions do we even ask him?
I don't know.
We'll have to figure that one out.
That's why they pay us the big bucks.
Uh-huh.
Because we are smart.
We're experts.
Yeah. We know our way around sports.
We almost have degrees.
I'm close.
You're a little bit closer than I am.
I'm more educated than you are.
Pretty much.
Dude, I'm taking classes just for the sake of it now. I'm taking Spanish just because I can.
That's great for you. I am taking classes because I have to.
Hola. ¿Cómo estás?
Cohen es muy loco.
Next episode is going to be fully in Spanish.
All Spanish.
Just you wait. All right. That'll be all for this episode of Talking Dogs. It's Friday. I want to go home. Be sure to stay tuned in the future for weekly podcasts on the See You in East Sower website and on Spotify. From Cohen Carpenter and Kai Ulbrich and everybody at the See You in East Sower newspaper, have a good day and go Dogs!